WMFO, Medford.
Last time on the Grand Hour.
Toward the two figures who waited, hidden in a clump of maple trees.
There wasn't any cause to shoot, Sheriff. There just wasn't any cause. Carl was deaf, and all the noise the train was making, he couldn't understand what they wanted.
Yeah, I know.
He couldn't understand a word. He tried to make out what they were saying, but he couldn't. And when he didn't hand it over...
Well, we'll get him, Mrs. Davis. Don't you worry about that. The posse's meeting here. We'll start out tonight, and we won't be back until we get him.
That won't do Carl much good.
Well, at least we'll make sure they don't kill nobody else in cold blood.
If only I hadn't have given him that belt. If I just hadn't have given it to him.
Belt?
It was my anniversary present to Carl. We were married 25 years last week. That's why we was taking the train trip over to Cheyenne, and that's why I gave him the belt. The bucket was sort of silver-like.
What did that have to do with...
It was a belt they wanted. But Carl didn't understand when they asked him. He'd already handed over his money and his watch, and then one of them noticed the belt, and he said, "That buckle's silver, ain't it? Give it to me." Carl couldn't make out what he was talking about. And the fella got real mad, and he jabbed a gun into Carl's side. And...
I sure must have been sleeping sound, or I'd have heard him right up. Of course, they've probably been as quiet as they could under the circumstances, but I usually wake up when I'm out in the range and somebody's prowling around my neighborhood.
Howdy.
What's your name, mister, and what are you doing out here?
Well, I was sleeping.
Don't get funny. We want straight answers and we want them quick.
Now, you too.
What do you think, kid?
I guess he's Ponce, all right. Leastways, that six-shooter sure fits the description.
Just who is it you boys are looking for? A
couple of outlaws held up the Cheyenne train last night about 4 miles east of Black Ledge.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, the
fellas all alone?
Oh, no. There's a posse. A little way back. Sheriff. We figure them outlaws will try to get through Miller Pass. If they can make it, they'll be in the clear.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
You ain't seen nobody tonight?
No, I can't say I have.
Well, that's great. Looks like we struck it lucky for once, Lex.
What do you mean, kid?
Well, maybe Ponsett wouldn't mind us riding along with him, seeing as how he knows the way. And if we did run into them bandits, it'd be three of us to take care of them.
Yeah, sure.
Somehow I've got the doggonest feeling we're headed right.
Scar saddled up, we'll start.
That's a pretty steep trail, isn't it?
Yeah.
There haven't been any fresh tracks along the trail. Leastwise, I haven't seen any.
I was so busy riding, I didn't have time to do much looking.
Well, if somebody was just ahead of us, you'd think we'd spot a sign of them here and there.
Maybe somehow we got ahead of them.
Well, in that case, there wouldn't be much point you fellas going on, would there? Yeah. That belt there, that mighty fancy belt you're wearing there, kid.
Huh?
I don't think I've ever seen a buckle like that before. Silver, isn't it? That looks like a sort of blood you got on there.
Oh. Why, I cut my hand the other day.
Yeah, blood stains are apt to be sort of permanent.
Yeah.
Like milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books. There's no due date, tolls our expiration in the grand hour. We're going to pick up this show where we left off 2 weeks ago. I played you Act One. You just heard all the highlights from Act One. The Silver Buckle. That was originally aired on the 17th of January, 1954. So that would have been the 17th of January when I played that. Now, we'll begin Act Two.
Call March of Dimes headquarters this week. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
As soon as the horses were rested, we started off again. But the higher we got, the harder it was for the animals to keep moving. The air was thinner now. You noticed it every time you took in a gulp. And the trail seemed even fainter than before. Oh, a couple of times we missed it completely and just went off on a tangent. And then we had to swing around and try to pick up where we'd gone wrong.
They'll never catch up with them at this rate.
No, I wouldn't worry about it, Kit.
What do you mean?
I still haven't seen any fresh tracks. Looks to me like nobody's been through here since last rain.
You'd keep your eyes on the trail instead of looking for horseshoe marks. We might not get lost so often.
Easy, kid.
I told you boys you were letting yourselves in for something.
Yeah, you told us. Well, come on. Let's see if we can make up some time.
I sure couldn't help notice that the longer we rode, the less friendly Kit Springer got. I sort of put it down to the fact that he must have been sort of worn out. We weren't taking any pleasure jaunt, that was for sure. I couldn't blame him for being a little down at the mouth. But there was one thing that sort of troubled me about this fella. Something he said kept pecking at the back of my brain.
I cut my hand the other day. That must have been when it happened. I didn't realize I'd smeared my belt.
I shifted around and glanced back over my shoulder. Kit had one hand on the saddle horn and the other was gripping the reins. The cut must have been all healed up by now. Leastways, he didn't seem to have any trouble with it. And a cut deep enough to spot his belt that way, it must have taken several days to get well. Funny, he'd never noticed the blood on his belt before I mentioned it to him. Well, one thing was certain, Kit Springer sure couldn't be much of a dude. The sun finally went down and we made camp for the night. We managed to find a pretty good-sized level spot right above the trail. Lex had built a fire, and I cooked up a mess of beans and some pan bread. Kit didn't seem to be very hungry, though.
Moon ought to be coming up pretty soon.
Oh, another hour or so.
Think it'll give off much light?
Oh, some, I guess.
Not enough to see by, huh?
To see what?
Well, you said we were almost through the pass, didn't you?
We've got a couple, three more miles.
Why do we have to stop here, then? The horses could feel their way.
Just simmer down, Kit. Just simmer down. It's plain enough we're not going to run into those fellows you're after. They're either out of the pass now, or what's more likely, they never took this trail in the first place. That posse's probably captured them hours ago. More coffee, Lex?
Yeah, thanks.
Kit?
No, I've had enough. There's a town on the other side of the pass, ain't there?
Yeah, English Creek. Just a little burg.
Well, spending the night there would be a whole lot better than sitting out here. You could get a bath and a shave, change of clothing.
You wouldn't want to risk your neck on the trail just for a bath, would you?
No, I guess not. But I ain't very comfortable wearing the same breeches and shirt day after day.
That's so. I didn't figure you for the particular type.
Well, you figured wrong, Mr. Ponsett. Kit's a real fancy Dan.
Oh, that's so.
Yeah, you ought to see him on Saturday night when he starts off for town. Looks like a real riverboat gambler. That's what he looks like.
Well, there's nothing the matter with a man just because he tries to keep himself presentable, is there?
No, nothing at all.
Well, reckon we might as well turn in.
All right, you fellas go ahead. I'll bank the fire. You know, it's funny you never used this trail before.
What's so funny about it?
Well, seeing as how you live in Black Ledge.
We never said we lived there.
No, I guess you didn't, come to think of it. But, well, since you were part of Sheriff's posse, I sort of jumped at the conclusion.
We were just passing through on our way to Beaver Junction. We heard about the train robbery. Seemed like the sheriff needed all the help he could get, so we volunteered.
Not to mention the reward, of course.
Not to mention the reward.
Hey, by the way, who is the sheriff of Black Ledge now?
What difference does it make?
Well, I'm just curious, that's all.
Well, I don't remember his name. Wasn't time for any formal introductions. Folks just call him Sheriff.
Oh, yeah, I see. Big fella, is he? With a mustache?
Look, Ponset, you were the one who was so all-fired determined on us stopping for some shut-eye. So how about settling down?
Sure. Sure.
Night.
Night. I rolled up my blanket and I turned my face toward the fire. And as far as I could tell, the Springer boys hadn't been lying to me. A man could join up with a posse and not find out the sheriff's name. And I guess a man could ride himself half to death on the off chance of earning him $1,500 reward if he had a mind to do it. Of course, it hadn't worked out. Kit's hunch on the train robbers were using this pass. It just hadn't worked out. But I'd played plenty of wild hunches myself. But then I dropped off to sleep. The last thing I remember is hearing my mind say, maybe you're wrong, Ponset. Maybe those outlaws are using the pass after all. It just kept echoing through my head. Maybe you're wrong, Ponset. Well, must have been 6-7 hours later when I... At first, I wasn't sure what it was that woke me up. One of the horses, maybe. I started to drift off again.
Lex. Lex.
Mm-hmm.
Shh. What's the matter?
It's almost dawn. You gotta start moving.
What about Ponson? Are you awake?
I don't think so.
Britt. Britt.
I don't know what it was that kept me from answering back, but I just laid there, hardly breathing, not moving, not even opening my eyes.
Is he still asleep?
Yeah. We ain't gonna need him the rest of the way, Lex.
That's what I figured.
Trouble is, he knows our names, what we look like. Sooner or later, he'd put two and two together.
You didn't have to tell him who we was.
I knew it would make no difference one way or the other.
You're gonna shoot him, kid.
Nope. You are.
Me?
Yeah. I'm already wanted for a couple of killings, Lex. But they're only after you for robbery. Even though you're my brother, if the going got too rough someday, you might want to ease out of the partnership.
Did you know better than that, kid?
I'll know it for sure. After you kill Ponset. Well?
Okay, kid. Whatever you say.
I'll get the horses.
Hurry it up.
I heard Kit move off across the clearing. For a minute, that's all I heard. Then Lex started moving, too. I lifted my eyelids just a hair, and I saw him through the lashes. He pulled his revolver out of the holster. My gun belt was lying right beside me, and I inched my left hand toward it real slow so he wouldn't notice. I felt my fingers slide across a couple of stones, but the gun was still a little space beyond. I hadn't touched it yet. Lex was standing right over me now. I wasn't going to have much more time. If I didn't get a grip on that gun the next second or two, I'd spun over as he fired. But the bullet had seared my shoulder and dug into my chest. My right hand jerked up and I let fire. First I thought I'd missed him. I saw his fingers start to squeeze off another shot, but he never finished pulling the trigger. His whole body was shaking like an aspen tree, and he just...
tilted forward. I slid out of the way as he fell.
I hadn't had time to feel the pain before now, but it started tearing through me so bad I almost let out a yell.
One shot ought to have been enough to... Lex!
Just hold it there, Kit.
What?
It seems you were right about the train bandits using this trail to...
The words wouldn't come out. And everything started blurring in front of my eyes, and I could barely keep from dropping my gun. It was getting light now. Kit could see how bad I was shot. He whipped his revolver up from his side. The sound kind of jerked me back to my senses, and I managed to pull the trigger. I knew my aim wouldn't be so good, but it was good enough to send Kit diving back of a rock for cover. And there was a tree stump not more than a couple feet away, and I managed to roll myself behind it.
I know you're hurt, Ponson. You can't hold out much longer.
I sure wasn't in any way to argue with him. If I could just get off a couple of more shots, maybe he'd think twice before, but I didn't have enough strength to. What's that? That couldn't be Kit fired. I pushed my chin up to the edge of the stump. What is it? Were there horses coming up the trail from the same direction we'd come? And for a minute I couldn't think who, and then I remembered. The posse. They'd been following us all the time. That's why Kit was so anxious to stay on the move. Well, that's the sheriff, Springer. I wouldn't plan on going much further. I could see him. I knew he was calling his horse. There was only one way back trail. He had to ride past me in the open. I propped myself up against the side of his stump, and I shifted my gun to my left hand, and for a minute I thought the trigger was stuck, and then I...
Ant, he's coming too, Sheriff.
Yeah, good, good.
How you feeling, Brad?
What? Doc? Well, Doc Easton, what the Sam hell are you doing out here?
Well, there's no law saying a doctor can't go along with a posse, is there?
No. Well, for my sake, it's a good thing you did. Well, what about Kit Springer? Did you catch up with him, Sheriff?
You saved us the trouble, Brett.
Well, I couldn't have done that. He must have got away. That last shot of mine, it was a mile wide.
Well, maybe you didn't exactly hit him, but you sure scared the daylights out of his horse.
What?
Yeah, we saw the whole thing from down below. Springer was just turning out of the trail when you fired. His horse reared and started slipping over the edge. Springer tried to jump clear, but he just couldn't seem to tear himself loose from that saddle.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing, Britt. When we finally found him, his body was still fastened to that saddle.
Yeah,
the belt he was wearing had got caught onto the horn somehow. That must have been what drug him along when his horse fell.
Never heard of a man's belt hooking onto a saddle horn before.
Neither did I, but that's what happened, all right.
Yeah. Well, how about it, Britt? You going to be able to ride on into English Creek after I finish bandaging you up?
Yeah, I'll do my best, Doc. I'll sure do my best.
Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Eleanor Audley, Forrest Lewis, Bill Conrad, Joel Cranston, and Frank Gerstle. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam. And the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Hal Gibney speaking.
As Hal Gibney's last time announcing the Six Shooter. Again, the original air date was the 17th of January, 1954.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded. Rule one, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO Medford.
Continue traditional format of the Grand Hour with the double billing. This will be The Shadow. Orson Welles, the original air date was the 19th of June, 1938.
The Shadow knows.
Blue Call presents
The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Cranston is known to the underworld as The Shadow. Never seen, only heard. The Shadow's true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, The Tomb of Terror.
And so, gentlemen, we are gathered here on the grounds of the City Museum to pay tribute to those who have successfully brought to this country the building that stands before you, the authentic tomb of the Egyptian pharaoh, King Khufratep. It is my pleasure to present to you now the man who is largely responsible for its discovery, transportation, and reassembly, the director of the expedition, Dr. Romney Hale. Thank you. Thank you. Directors of the museum and fellow workers, I am very grateful. It has been through your cooperation that this work has been made possible, although perhaps we owe a vote of thanks to good King Khufratep himself. In spite of the legendary curse that all who gaze upon King Khufratep's mummy shall die, the bulk of our job is finished. Now, before you are admitted for the inspection, will you excuse Mr. Avery, Mr. Johnson, and myself while we make a brief check of the interior of the tomb? Harry, Jack, will you come with me?
Surely, Doctor.
Oh, certainly, Doctor.
Well, gentlemen, how does the place look to you?
Why, Doctor, you've done an amazing job.
It looks exactly as it did when we first unearthed it in Egypt.
Thank you.
Would you like to pay your respects to His Majesty?
Oh, yes. Indeed I would.
Very well. Will you help me with the lid of the mummy case?
Oh, sure.
There you are. Khufratep the king, lord of Egypt.
My magnificent face.
Yes, wonderfully preserved.
We are defying the ancient curse by looking upon that face.
Oh, come, Dr. Hale. Surely you don't believe
those. Look. Look at the mummy's eyes.
Why, that's strange. They seem to glow.
Yes, I see it too. A sort of unearthly light.
What is this, doctor, a trick?
No, gentlemen, I give you my word. I don't know what it could be.
The light's growing brighter.
I don't like this. It's uncanny. Close that case.
Let's get out of here, doctor.
Yes,
I can't understand it. If we hadn't all seen it, I would... Oh!
Doctor Hale, what's the matter?
My...
Take his arm, Jack. Let's get him outside.
Where are you?
Oh, what's wrong? What's the matter with Dr. Hale?
I don't know. He suddenly collapsed.
He was... Jack! Jack, what's the matter with you? Someone get a doctor, quick. These two men are very ill. Harry, what happened in there?
Well, Mr. Rafferty, I was...
Harry!
Catch him, he's falling.
Harry, look. Here, man, tell me, what happened?
Mr. Rafferty, it was... The eyes. The eyes.
Yes, yes.
It's King Khufratep's curse.
Doctor, tell me, how are they?
All three of these men are dead. Hold those fences.
What do you got, Chief?
A terrific yarn. Dr. Romany Hale, the archaeologist, and two of his assistants died mysteriously an hour ago in King Khufratep's tomb. Play up the curse angle and spread it for all it's worth.
Dried soup, cream on a side.
Some of those donuts, too, please.
Oh, donuts? Lamont, do you suppose we can dunk?
Well, certainly, Margot. Lunch wagon etiquette not only allows dunking, it encourages it.
There's your donuts, Chief. That'll be 26.
Here you are. Just keep the change.
Ah, thanks. Say, bud, is there anything new on them guys that kicked off over at that coffee, the kipper, you know, that Egyptian king?
No, nothing new.
Hey, how about my ham on rye?
Right with you, right with you.
Just what do you make of that tomb affair, Lamont?
Just amazing. The newspapers are playing up the superstition fallacy.
You don't think that all three deaths were due to coincidence?
Hardly that, but I certainly don't hold to the Khufratep curse theory.
But something strange must have happened in that tomb.
Unquestionably.
According to the newspaper reports, one of the three men before he died was heard to mutter something about eyes, terrible eyes. And his last words were King Khufratep's curse.
They were undoubtedly terrified by something they saw in there. They did not die of fear.
Oh, I know. According to the doctors, they all died natural death.
Yes, that's quite true.
One of pneumonia, one of typhoid, and one of heart disease.
That's the way the doctors had to write their death certificates. Perhaps when the truth is known, it will have to be changed.
Changed? What? Well, what do you mean, Lamont?
You finished eating?
Oh, yes.
Shall we take a walk?
Oh, all right, let's go.
Good night, boss.
Good night.
Night. Lamont, what did you mean the death certificates will have to be changed?
Three men do not die within seconds of one another of different diseases without a single underlying cause.
Oh, that's true.
Margot? The mysterious death of those three men has challenged the imagination of the shadow. I must find out the medical details of the death of those men.
Then you think there's more in it than the papers have printed?
I know there is.
I can get those details for you.
Good. As soon as you have the necessary information, communicate with me. The shadow will await your call. Hello.
Lamont, this is Margot.
Oh, yes, Margot. What did you find out?
I just talked to Dr. Burley, he's in charge of the case.
Yes?
He said that the three men actually died, as the papers said, but there was one detail that was not printed.
What is that?
Well, the doctors themselves don't seem to understand it, but an examination of the victim's blood has shown in each case a complete absence of leukocytes.
Leukocytes?
Yes.
Those are white corpuscles.
Yes.
Do you realize what that means? Without white corpuscles in the blood, the human system would have nothing with which to combat disease. No wonder they died. Margot, this is the first key to the mystery. Perhaps the shadow can find the answer to the next question within the museum walls.
I tell you, we must go through with the public opening of the tomb as originally planned.
But will the public be there?
We'll have to take that chance.
Gentlemen, I wish we had never started this project.
Now, see here, Kent. You've been acting like an old woman about this whole thing.
But, Mr. Rafferty, I...
We've poured thousands of dollars of the museum's money into the tomb. And it's up to us to dispel this nonsense about the Kupertep curse.
I am not so sure that it is nonsense.
Rubbish.
Oh, you can't dismiss the fact that three men died.
They all died natural deaths.
I wouldn't be too sure about that, Mr. Rafferty.
Who's speaking?
Who is that?
I am called the Shadow.
The Shadow?
What's this?
I've heard of you. What do you want of us?
I've been investigating the deaths of your three colleagues. And I've come to warn you that no one must be permitted within the walls of the tomb.
Why do you say that?
Because anyone who enters may not come out alive.
Are you implying that there is truth in the Kupertep curse?
I am telling you, Mr. Rafferty, I have reason to believe that the name of the curse of Kupertep is cold, premeditated murder.
Nonsense.
Not nonsense, Mr. Stevenson.
With all respect to your unsolicited information, we are not going to be intimidated by an unknown voice.
Speak for yourself, Mr. Stevenson. I am inclined to respect the Shadow's warning.
Quiet, Kent. On what grounds, Shadow, do you base your statement?
You will have to accept what I've said on faith.
I've had enough of this.
Wait, Mr. Stevenson. We may learn more.
No. I'm going to rid us of this hocus-pocus once and for all.
Yes. What do you propose to do, Stevenson?
I'm going into that tomb tonight, right now.
Don't do that, Mr. Stevenson.
I know what I'm doing, Shadow. Well, who'll accompany me? Don't tell me that you're all afraid.
Why, no, not at all. But perhaps none of us should be too hasty.
Very wisely spoken, Mr. Rafferty.
Very well. Then I shall go alone.
You are very foolhardy, Stevenson.
We shall see. Who has the key to the tomb?
I have, Mr. Stevenson, but...
Now, give it to me.
Mr. Rafferty, can't you persuade him to change his mind?
Don't you think, Stevenson, Kent, we might... give me the key.
Very well. Here you are.
Thank you.
Now, wait. We'll accompany you to the door of the tomb.
All right.
You may be going to your death, Stevenson.
I'll chance that. Come along, men. Well, here we are. Have any of you changed your mind, Mr. Rafferty?
No, thank you.
Hawkins?
I prefer to wait outside.
I know. There's no use asking you, Kent.
Don't go in there, Mr. Stevenson. Don't go in. There may be something horrible waiting for you in there.
Give me that flashlight. I'll find that out for myself.
He's in the tomb.
Nothing horrible has happened in here yet.
Don't touch the mummy case.
Why not? Might as well make the investigation complete.
Don't, Stevenson. You mustn't. Can't any of you stop him.
Now, what can we do? I'm opening the mummy case.
We've got to get him out of there. I'll go myself.
Here, come back here, Ken.
Stevenson.
I'm looking at the mummy's face. Hey, that's strange. There's something peculiar here.
Come away from that mummy, Stevenson.
Kent! Stevenson, I insist that you both come out of there at once. But there's something here that I don't understand. There seems to be... Kent, help me.
It's happened. He's choking.
Kent, bring him out here.
I'm trying to. Here. All right, Stevenson. Here, now just lean on me.
Stevenson. Man, what happened?
I looked at Kupka. Oh. He's dead. He's dead!
It's not possible.
The Shadow was right.
Yes, gentlemen. Stevenson ignored my warning. He's perished. This should convince all of you that there is a ruthless killer masked behind the Kupertep curse.
Ladies and gentlemen, one more...
This is Earl Smithsonian from the Top Hat Plateau Show on WBED. I've always wondered where the radio wave expired. And I found out where. Here on the Grand Hour on WMFO Medford.
This is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, WMFO.org for those on the web, Tufts Freeform Radio. This is The Shadow, starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston, Margot Stevenson as Margot Lane, The Tomb of Terror. Original air date, the 19th of June, 1938. This would have been season, what they considered season 1B. They picked up the season, and it aired over the summer. So let's peek in and see if we're ready to return to Act 2. No. Still a commercial going. I try to play over some of these commercials that are in this particular case on the album. It's a vinyl album. So, I believe, here we go.
Margot, what did you learn about Stevenson's death?
Well, Lamont, the doctors officially called it influenza.
What about the blood test?
It was the same as the others. The white corpuscles had been destroyed.
Just as I thought. That proves that Stevenson was murdered, too, and by the same instrument.
But, Lamont, what can that instrument be?
It may be a serum, poison gas, I don't know. More important than the killing device is to find the killer's motive.
You found out something, Lamont?
Not exactly, but I saw a man at the museum about whom I should like to know more.
Who is he?
Aldous Kent, an assistant curator. I'm sure that he has more knowledge of this affair than he allows himself to show.
Why do you suspect him?
For several reasons. His apparent concern for Stevenson's safety was a bit overdone. For a scientist, he was surprisingly naive about the Kufratep curse, and most important, in spite of his outward fear, he followed Stevenson into the tomb. I'd like to know more about that man, Margot. And that's where you can help me.
Yes, Lamont, but how?
By visiting Kent as a newspaper woman. Interview him about his career. Find out whether he's interested in any branch of science other than archaeology. Well, Margot?
I saw Aldous Kent.
Yes?
He hasn't always been an archaeologist. He worked at many things.
For instance?
Well, before he went to work for the museum, he was employed as an assistant by Dr. Faber. You know, the well-known biologist.
Very interesting, Margot. I think that's all I'll have to know.
But Lamont, does that have any bearing on the murder?
It may have everything to do with them. I'll be able to answer that question after the shadow pays a call on Dr. Faber.
Faber.
Huh? What? Who's that?
Don't be startled, Dr. Faber.
Who are you?
I am the Shadow.
Are you in this room? I can't see you.
I regret that I must remain in the shadows.
What do you want?
I am seeking information.
Well?
I would like to have you tell me what you know of Aldous Kent.
Kent? Aldous Kent? Well, he worked for me. He was my assistant for several years.
Yes, I know that, Dr. Faber. What kind of a man was he?
Very efficient laboratory man.
Why did he leave your employ?
Well, frankly, because he was dissatisfied. Kent was a very moody man. He felt that his work should be more fully recognized.
What sort of work did he do?
He was active in all the routine laboratory experiments.
Can you recall what some of those experiments were?
Well, let me see. Well, he made some really brilliant contributions to our work with the Roentgen ray. That's the X-ray, of course.
Yes, I know. Exactly what were those experiments?
We were varying the ray to determine its effect on animal life.
What was that effect?
Well, at one stage of the game, it was destructive. We developed a ray that was capable of destroying the white corpuscles in the blood of the laboratory animals.
It's enormously interesting, Doctor. Tell me, does such a ray have the same effect on human beings?
Oh, yes. Yes, it probably does.
Thank you, Dr. Faber. You have given me the solution to the mystery of the Kufratep curse.
I feel certain, Margot, that the machine of death is concealed somewhere within Kufratep's tomb.
But why must you go there tonight?
Because I can investigate without danger of interference. There's no time to be lost.
Well, can't you confront Kent with the information you already have?
No, Kent's a clever man. He might give him time to destroy the evidence. And we could pin nothing on him.
Yes, I see.
If I can uncover the deadly ray and positively identify Kent with it, he can be tricked into capture.
Here's the museum.
You turn in this driveway. It's a precaution. I'll switch off the headlights.
Lamont, I hate to have you going into that tomb alone. It's an eerie-looking place.
No, nothing will happen to me.
Yes, that's what the others thought.
The others weren't aware of the real danger as I am. Hand me the flashlight, Margot.
Here you are.
Thank you.
Wait, what's that over there among the trees?
Yeah, there has to be someone carrying a lantern.
He's approaching the tomb. Lamont, who can it be?
Wait. I think I recognize him. Yes. The old watchman.
Oh. Shall you wait now until he goes?
I'm not sure that he's going. He seems to be entering the tomb.
Lamont, isn't it strange after all that's happened that he should dare to enter there alone?
Very strange, and I'm going to find out why. I don't need this flashlight, Margot.
What are you going to do?
It is the shadow who will enter that tomb for a little conversation with the old watchman.
Shall I wait for
you? No. Take the car and return home. Stand by for the shortwave wireless. I may need your help in communicating a message of vital importance.
Good evening, Your Imperial Majesty. I've come again to see that you are resting well. Your work is nearly done. Only one more to gaze into your eyes. And then the vengeance is complete.
You have served me well.
Who speaks?
Who indeed would speak within the resting place of the king?
Are you the...
Yes. It is I, Khufratep, Pharaoh of Egypt.
Oh, Your Majesty.
Rise up. You need not kneel in my presence.
Yes, Your Highness.
Do not tremble. You have nothing to fear.
You are not angry?
Angry. Why should I be angry toward one who serves my interests? I have come to reward you.
To reward me?
Yes. But first, I must have an accounting. Have an accounting.
Well, what do you mean?
You must tell me how you brought death to the defilers of my tomb. By the curse which bears my name.
Oh, the credit is not mine, Your Majesty.
Whose then?
Aldous Kent.
Aldous Kent?
Yes.
Why should he concern himself with me?
It is not your vengeance alone that he seeks, but his own as well, and mine. Kent is a great man, but no one will recognize him. They keep him slaving in the museum day after day, doing all the real work. Some others get the glory, just as they did to me. Now he's evening his score. Hale, Avery, Johnson, Stevenson, all those have paid for their stolen fame. But one more must die. Hawkins. And then Kent will achieve the position that is rightfully his.
Do you know how Kent destroyed those men?
Of course. I helped him, Your Majesty. Yeah, it was clever. So clever. They all scoffed at the legend of your curse, but it was really you who killed them.
I killed them?
No one would dream that within your mummy there lies concealed the generator of the ray.
What ray?
The ray that shines from your eyes and destroys all who look upon you.
Show me how this is done.
It's so easy, Your Majesty. Here, hidden here in the wall is a switch. You see? It is thrown like this. Then whoever approaches the mummy case, as I'm doing, and lifts the lid, so, and gazes into your eyes, the gleam of death shines upon them. Oh, what have I done? I didn't mean to look. I couldn't. Save me. Save you.
I cannot save you. Your own evil knowledge has destroyed you. But by your death, you have pointed the way to Aldous Kent's undoing. Margot Lane. Calling Margot Lane. Calling Margot Lane. Communicate with Rafferty, the director of the museum, at once. Tell him to arrange the public opening of the tomb tomorrow as planned. Be sure that both Kent and Hawkins will be there. This is important. Margot, tell Rafferty that he must follow my directions implicitly. A man's life is at stake.
Before admitting the public, I have invited you, gentlemen of the press, to gather here to dispel once and for all this nonsense about the legend of the Cooper-Tep curse.
Well, just how do you propose to do that?
Yeah. Well, Mr. Burke, as you know, the tradition is that everyone who looks at the face of the mummy dies.
Sure, I know that.
I know that.
Now, this is Mr. Hawkins, gentlemen. He is the sole survivor of the Cooper-Tep expedition.
Yeah, we know Hawkins.
Yeah.
He has volunteered to show you that there is no truth in the stories that your newspapers have played into national prominence.
What's he going to do?
The mummy case will be opened in your presence, and Mr. Hawkins will personally gaze on Cooper-Tep.
Well, this ought to be good.
Are you ready, Mr. Hawkins?
Well, I...
Very well, you may proceed.
So, Mr. Rafferty, I... Well, I...
Go ahead, Hawkins.
Mr. Rafferty, I can't. I changed my mind.
What? But, Mr. Hawkins, do you realize what this means?
Yes, Hawkins, you must go through with it. Well,
I'm afraid not, Kent. I've lost my nerve.
The prestige of the museum is at stake.
Well, you seem to have changed your attitude, Kent.
Well, I disapproved of this plan at the beginning, but as long as you've gone this far, I think you should carry it out.
Well, Kent is right.
Well, I'm sorry, but... Well, when I think of the others... What happened to them? And seeing them die, I just
well,
can't.
Well, boys, looks like the show's over. Let's go.
Wait, gentlemen, don't leave.
Now, Mr. Hawkins, if I volunteer to look on the mummy's face first, will you follow me?
Well, I...
That's certainly fair enough, Hawkins.
Very well.
Have I your permission to open the mummy case, Mr. Rafferty?
Yes, you have.
You're very brave, Mr. Kent.
Who's that? It's the Shadow.
The Shadow? Boy, what a yarn this is going to be.
Shadow, why are you here?
I anticipated your performance, Mr. Kent, and I came to see that it was carried out properly.
What do you mean by that?
Before you proceed, I suggest that somebody throw the switch concealed in the carving on the wall.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You do know, Mr. Kent. I want your demonstration to duplicate Hale's, Stevenson's, and the others. The switch was thrown then.
This is absurd.
Here it is. I found the switch.
Please turn it on, Mr. Rafferty.
There you are. It's on.
Good. Now you may continue your little performance, Mr. Kent.
This whole thing is ridiculous. I refuse to be made a fool of.
Are you trying to back out, Kent?
I will not continue under these conditions.
I thought you wouldn't. You know that to look on the mummy's face when the switch is on would mean death.
That is not true.
But it is. And no one should know better than you. Concealed within that mummy is a murderous ray. That ray is your own conception.
That's a lie. There is no ray.
Then why don't you look on Cooper-Tep now?
Because I...
Then you shall be forced to do so.
Oh, no. No.
Rafferty, Hawkins, lead him to the mummy case.
Come on. I won't. Let go, man. Let go.
Somebody left the lid of the case.
Let go. I won't look.
Now,
the eyes of Kufratep. Do you see the evil light that glows within them? That's what the others saw.
No, no! I did it! I killed him, I confess. I killed him, but don't make me look at him! Ah!
He's dead.
Then it's true. There is a ray.
Not any longer, gentlemen. I removed the machinery that generated that ray. All that you have just seen was carefully staged to trap Aldous Kent. He is dead. He died of fear. Fear of the thing which he himself created. You have all witnessed the end of the curse of Kufratep. A curse which fell justly on the true desecrator of the tomb.
You have been listening to a dramatized version of one of the many copyrighted stories which appear in the Shadow magazine, now on sale at your local newsstand.
Again, that was The Tomb of Terror. Original air date was the 19th of June, 1938. For the remainder of the show, I'm going to play out a couple of songs. Tubas in the Moonlight. And Means That You're Grand by the Andrews Sisters. Kind of for the grand hour here. I don't know when we're going to be returning. I guess the new schedule is going to come out on Sunday. So, until then, have a good day. It's supposed to be sunny here already, but it isn't. I believe it's about 21 degrees. Hope it's warmer where you are.
Say Bella, Bella, even say
Through the twilight, I can hear the humming of a melancholy coon. All the memories that still linger, I thank you, Mr. Moon. And although I've never smiled, winter, summer, autumn too, now here's one tune to remind me why I feel so blue. Tubas in the moonlight, playing for me all night, tell me what I want to hear. Am I only dreaming? Am I only scheming? Stars above me shining brightly. Why can't she be sitting there beside me? Tubas in the moonlight will bring my loved one home.
A bore, 'cause when he leaves the ship, he brings his dinghy to the shore, and then we meet there on the sand, and confidentially, his dinghy does more good upon the land than on the sea. Of all the dinghies that sail the sea, Davies is the only one for me. Some gobs climb the riggin' fast, and some just climb it slow. And some gobs, when they climb the riggin', holler out, heave-ho! Some just sail right into port and sail right out again. But when Davy drops his anchor, you can tell the boys from men. Of all the dinghies that sail the sea, Davy's is the only one for me. Davy really knows the proper way to steer his craft. There's one sailor really knows his forecastle from his aft. He tells me that a sailor's life is really a delight. For years he slept on waves, he says, that's why he rocks all night.